You're listening to The Profile.
Welcome to the Leadership Special, a show which features conversations with Christians in leadership about the topics that really matter. I'm Andy Peck, your host, and I've had the privilege of interviewing Christian leaders on over 1,000 shows, and so hope you'll enjoy this next conversation and will join us again next week.
This week I'm joined on the Leadership Show by one of the leading voices in an area that has impacted your work as a leader and will continue to do so. The area is digital theology. And my guest is Jonas Kjellberg. He's the Research Fellow on the Confession Project at Roehampton University. And one of the editors of the Oxford Handbook of Digital Theology, which has a vast array of articles written by an interdisciplinary group of scholars from different ecclesial traditions. If the words digital theology sound foreign to you, I'm looking forward to exploring why this is an important area to get a grip on wherever you're leading. So welcome, Jonas.
Thank you very much. Good to see you again.
How did you get into this whole area of digital theology, Jonas?
Yeah, so my interests have always been around church and society. So my background is both in theology and sociology. And I kind of ended up in this field by chance or providence when I was asked to write some articles around religion and digital technology. And that led on to further work, onto Durham and the Centre for Digital Theology and work at Spurgeon's and all sorts of other things.
Well, let me outline my suspicion on how Christian leaders are relating to digital theology. You can correct me afterwards if you like. In the main, they will be aware and perhaps using AI as part of information searches, using search engines online. They'll be aware of how the digital world is impacting people, maybe themselves, in terms of their lifestyle, how social media is affecting us all, and especially young people. Some, especially in charity and business worlds, are learning how to use AI in their working lives. There's an awareness that robots are serving the manufacturing world, and they see the blessings of them in the medical world, and how they may enhance detection of disease and help with operations. But digital theology as a whole is not something well understood. Is my summary accurate? And what might Christians' leadership need to be aware of?
So I think that would be correct. I think most Christian leaders are aware of the radical transformations that we're seeing due to technological innovation and implementations in all sorts of spheres of life. I think there is a little bit of an awareness as well that that does reflect and impact the church as well, and especially through the experience of the pandemic and having to go online for a lot of church practices. I think where there might be a lack is that that can also involve a theological reflection. A lot of reflection tends to revolve around whether technology is good or bad, or how to best use it or how not to use it. But I think it's important to think about as well, what are the theological implications of that? I think it's important to acknowledge that technology has always been part of the church, life of the church. So often we have a narrow understanding of technology. We tend to think of the latest technology as technology, but we forget that technology is an inherent part of human life and human existence, and has actually always been. So philosophers of technology would say that even language is a form of technology, because if we think of technology as tools that expand human capacity, then, you know, even languages. So technology has always been around us. It's always part of our lives. And I think that because it is part of who we are as human beings, it reflects the kind of technological innovation that we see in our society is a reflection of what we value within that society. And so it says something about who we think we are as human beings, what we value, and already then we're coming into contact with issues of theology What's truly of worth? What's God's will for our world, and how do we live well within it? So if we start then thinking about technology not just as tools, but also as environments and culture, then I think it becomes even more apparent why we need to think theologically about that. So a lot of people think of technology as tools that we can expand to different ends, whether good or bad. And that is true to some extent, but technology is more than that. It shapes the way that we act and interact, and has a bearing on our, therefore also social norms and practices, how we think, how we relate, and so forth. So in all of this, technology is kind of intermeshed into human life.
Within church culture, we're long past the era when the minister or the vicar was one of the most educated and respected leaders in the neighborhood. But some church leaders can operate as if they are the fount of all wisdom. How has the digital age changed how leaders function and relate to those that they lead?
So I think you're right. In some ways, what gives leaders authority, that we're seeing a transition. And the transition in digital culture, I think, matches a general cultural shift. So I'm not sure whether it's correlation or causation, if that makes sense. So is
Right.
digital culture causing us to go down towards a certain type of of leadership models and understandings of or what gives leaders authority, or is that just part of a general trend and the digital just reflects that? I think it's a bit of both. Just to give a few examples, it does seem to undermine some aspects of traditional religious authority. So as you said, a vicar cannot assume just because they have a dog collar or the status of the vicar that they will have authority, right? In some ways, it has to be earned. And you have to show that you're trustworthy, that you are a person. Maybe also charisma matters a bit more, personality. Authority needs to be earned a bit. I think the traditional religious authority can also be undermined through social media or even the possibility of the internet. Because if you're now preaching in your church, people will fact check you, or they will go home and check. Is that really what the Bible says about this? And then they find alternative views. Or a good example is how church meeting happens now on a denominational level, where they used to be very closed, just the hierarchy of the church were involved, but they're now often live streamed and they're commented upon on social media. And so the recent Lambeth Palace conference is a good example where there was a statement made. And then there was a big uproar on social media, and there had to be some changes to that statement.
Right,
So
right.
it's a kind of example of how religious authority is changing. What's interesting is that we're also seeing the rise of new religious authority, based on whether you have a platform, for example. So the influencer model of authority. So you have Christians that are gaining leadership and authority by virtue of being tech savvy, understanding how the social media channels work, how to play the algorithms, and how to put out catchy reels and so forth, who understands digital culture.
Right.
That gives rise to a new kind of authority. But it's also, I just want to highlight one more thing, and that is the authority of developers, which we might miss. So a good example is YouVersion. So if you have a Bible app on your phone, it's likely to be YouVersion. It's been downloaded a billion times. I mean, the success is phenomenal. I mean, it's off the charts. And it is one church in Oklahoma, Life.Church, that's founded this app. And they have an enormous influence just by the way they designed the app on how people read and engage with the Bible today. Another example is we've recently done a study on the Bible and AI, and there are some dedicated AI Bible apps that have up to 30 million users. And we can see by studying these apps, we can see actually how much the developers, how the design of those apps then influence again how readers engage. I mean, that's influence that well beyond most church leaders, even
Sure.
denominational leaders.
And in terms of being a disciple of Christ within a digital age, that this must have an enormous impact, but of course it could be for good or for ill, I guess.
This is actually really important to recognize. One point I tend to press quite a lot. And I think that what's happening is that we are moving towards what I would call a network discipleship model. So it used to be that people had their spiritual nourishment in the local church. Okay, so that was the main point where they would hear the word of God, they would worship, they would pray, they would engage with the community. And what's happened in our society, and it's not just the digital, but the digital is part of that, is that we now we get our spiritual nourishment from all sorts of different communities and resources. So a lot of us have moved some point in life. So that means that we might have gone to different church communities that we still might be in contact with. A lot of us will go to Christian conferences or seminars. We might be working for parachurch or Christian parachurch organizations or donate to them and be involved with them. But we also listen to a podcast such as this. We watch YouTube sermons by famous preachers around the world. We have WhatsApp groups that also functions as prayer groups with relatives and family and friends. And so we kind of pick and mix our discipleship by pulling on all these different kind of resources all the time. So the local church is only one part of this kind of wider network of how we grow and are nourished and develop our own Christian identity. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. No, it is very powerful, but it's, I guess the question is, from a church leader aspect, they need to be cognizant of that, but also aware that it's a very consumer-based model. So you find the preachers that you like, and it doesn't have the pastoral oversight that the local church has. So these are people that you consume. They don't impact your life. They don't ask hard questions of you. So from a leadership angle, there's elements of leadership in what they're doing, but not fully.
Yeah, so I think to be fair, some of these I guess engagement beyond the local church, could still be a different form of community. So
Sure,
a
no.
study a Bible study on group on Facebook or whatever it is, right? So
Okay.
but I think it's important to recognize that I don't think this is the fault. So individualism is not the fault of the individual. I often hear this, that Christian leaders lament individualism as though it's the fault of the individual. But it's part of the structure of our society that we live in. The makeup of our society does pull. So we don't live in stable societies. And I think in a stable society, identity is something that's given to you. You are such and such because you belong in such and such place. You belong to such and such church. You are such and such a son. And you're likely to follow in your dad's footstep or your mother's footsteps in the work that you do. So in that context, you are, identity is given to you. But because of the society that we live in, identity has to be constructed by the individual. And that's also true of our theologies, of our Christian identity. And that because we move, because we are constantly bombarded with different messages, the individual has to do this kind of discerning work and figure out who they are.
Okay.
Okay. Now, I don't think that's all bad. I think we have to acknowledge and can acknowledge that God does speak to us in different ways, and encounters us in different ways. I understand the critique of consumerism and so forth, and that is problematic, but there is also a sense that actually within Christian tradition, that's been acknowledged. That even look at Jesus' ministry, he did approach different people in different ways because he was needed meeting their needs and their personalities and so forth. But what this means for Christian leaders, which I think is probably the more important point, is that to lead well in this context is to guide and provide helpful resources for people in your church or whatever other context you might be in. So to help them negotiate this kind of world of constant being bombarded with different resources, engagement in different ways, partly by curating helpful resources, but also thinking about how can we actually, as church leaders, help our young people, our old people, to find some kind of stability in this world that's so transient. And ultimately, I think this is a real strength of the Christian faith in this particular point in time, is to say that, well, actually, your identity, yes, there is a sense in which we're living in this transient world, but your identity as a Christian is not just in the flux. It's not just what you make it into, but ultimately, you are a child of God.
Right. Sort of segueing a little bit into AI, we've touched on already, and this may be a bigger question that you can answer in a short time. How can leaders prepare their churches for the rapid changes AI will bring?
I'm wary of providing more advice on this because I know that church leaders are constantly grappling with time and all the different challenges they face. The kind of things that they have to be involved with and solve and think about is expanding constantly. But it does seem like AI is quite significant and will have a significant impact. The first thing to say is that despite the buzz, adaptation of AI is not as quick as people think. So you could catch your breath a little bit and say, actually, I can take a step back. I don't need to panic about this. It's fine to, and we're kind of still working this out. We don't really know, is this actually going to be really useful? Or is it just going to be gimmicky? And even if you read the debates, public debate in academia, people are kind of in different camps. No need to kind of panic about this quite yet, at least.
Okay.
So take a step back, take a big breath. There is a reticence in church leadership to use this technology. And I can understand why. There are good reasons for it. But it comes back to this other point that I was trying to make before, that even if you're not using it, it's still massively impacting the people around you. Ordinary people are turning to AI for spiritual questions already. As I mentioned, there are dedicated Bible apps, AI Bible apps that have 30 million users. It's a kind of an indication that people are using this technology to interpret the Bible. So, regardless of how you personally feel about it and whether you want to use it or not, people around you are going to. And that's going to shape the kind of people they become because this technology will have a formative impact also on us. Whether it's going to be helpful or not, I'm still undecided. There is some research that obviously points to the lack of that it lessens creative thinking amongst humans and so forth. Their ability to remember things. So there are some formative aspects, but it might be that we learn new skills through it. Or maybe there are ways that we can use it to actually enhance our cognitive abilities, our creativity, and so forth. What I'm trying to say is that that has an impact on, even if you are a church leader for an organization and you're looking at what kind of skill sets do you need in your organization. It will impact that because you're recruiting people and they will be shaped and formed by AI. So you have got to think about what skills are they bringing. This is kind of a classic thinking about when employing people. And that those kind of skills will be changing. I think the main thing is obviously just to stay informed as best as you can. I think it's fine to experiment yourself. So, for example, if you haven't done it before, just have a go at speaking to an AI companion that you have in like a personal conversation with, just to see how it works, and you can see how convincing it is. And then there are already a number of resources out there. Maybe I can mention a few. Would that be helpful, Andy?
Yes, please, that would, yeah.
There is a there is there's annual gatherings in London through missional AI. And
Okay.
that's more for your kind of parachurch, mostly for your parachurch kind of scene. So you have a Bible society, kind of, you have mission organizations, all sorts of people. And that tends to be a little bit more bullish in terms of the possibilities. AI Christian is a UK-based network, and they have some resources on their website that you can have a look at. I know that lots of churches on denominational level are developing policies. So one would be the Methodist Church have got some interim policies already happening. The Catholic Church has done thinking about AI for a long time, but it tends to be a bit more high level, kind of theological, philosophical, ethical. But you know, they're normally really thought through, quite good stuff.
Thank you, Angus. Well, that's a really helpful introduction and perhaps allays the fears of some, perhaps. So I see you're involved in a conference, the Global Network for Digital Theology, in June. It's based in Zurich, is accessible online. So you're chairing a session entitled "The Story of Digital Theology," and with your wife, Nina, looking at disability theology and digitality. So what can you tell us by way of a teaser to that? For some who may
All
want
right.
to log on to the conference.
The Global Network for Digital Theology has been running conferences. I think this is our sixth conference, bringing together leading scholars in the field. And this year we are celebrating the launch of the Oxford Handbook of Digital Theology. And we're doing that and then taking big stock of what's happened in the field of digital theology to date, as well as discussing the contributions to the handbook. And so if you don't know very much about digital theology, it's kind of a good place to start. It is obviously, it's academic, so that might put some people off, but please do come along, because I think this kind of thinking, it might not have immediate, always immediate relevant impact, or practical outcomes, but it helps shaping your longer term thinking and wider thinking about technology. The good thing is that it's free. And so we're bringing together all these top scholars, and you can sign up on our website, so for free. Global Network for Digital Theology or gonedigital.media is a website. You can Google those. Maybe as a way of teaser of our own chapter that I wrote together with my wife. So I think for people, the connection with disability and technology is maybe you don't think about it immediately, but if you start thinking about it, you see how interconnected it is in our society. So you can think about the disability, it's a sign for disability, right? The person in a wheelchair. That's a universal sign.
Yeah.
It's really interesting, isn't it? That even our universal sign for disability marks the link between disability and technology.
Right, yes, indeed.
Right? So we are unpacking some of that and how we should think about that as Christians and what theology brings to that conversation about. And it raises questions about what it means to be human and how should we relate to technology, and to what extent should we think of technology as integrated to the human body and art and so forth.
Sure. And that, of course, is just physical disability that you alluded to there. There's a whole range of other disabilities.
Yes, there are, and we explore. I mean, the disability is obviously it's a very difficult term to define, and you're always wrestling whether it's a good term or not. What we talk about in this chapter is that maybe a better way of speaking about this is to talk about limits.
Right.
So, all humans, we have limits. They are just different limits,
Sure.
and so then it becomes a question of how do we negotiate those limits.
Well, Jonas, time's almost defeated us, but just time to remind us of the actual date in June when this conference is going to be around, and also details of the handbook. So.
Sure. It is the 15th to 17th of June, and we tend to have our sessions in the afternoon, UK time. It's a global conference, so people will be joining us from around the world. In terms of the handbook, it can now be pre-ordered, and I think release date is around early July.
Okay. And it's the sort of tome that you would, it's one for the library, or indeed if you have a you're a local church and you have a bookstall, invest in it so that people can access it.
I think it'll probably be the one volume that more belongs to a library, at least in its hardcover form for most people, to be quite frank and open. It's a little bit on the expensive side.
Sure,
So
no,
but
that's it was absolutely.
there will be a cover back copy at some point, and that should be a bit more accessible.
Excellent. Well, Jonas, we've just dipped our toe into this topic, but you've given us enough pointers so that we can explore more if we need to. And certainly, I think that conference sounds like a lot of fun to, if we're new to the whole area, to start to understand the breadth of how Christians are engaged in it and doing the thinking for us. So we're very grateful to you and to them. So thank you.
Okay, thank you, Andy, and please do come along. As I said, it's free, it's available, and lots of different perspectives.
That was my conversation with Jonas Kjellberg. It's Jonas, Jonas, Kjellberg. He's research fellow on the Confession Project at Roehampton University. He touched on a number of areas, particularly one to flag up, which we've mentioned on the Leadership Show in the past, is AI Christian Network. So type in AI Christian into your Google search engine, and you'll find a website with Christians there who've done some discussion on digital theology and particularly AI, of course. And then that other grouping is Missional AI, the parachurch organization or gatherings that that Jonas mentioned. The Oxford Handbook of Digital Theology is the book that we were reflecting on. And the conference coming up is 15th to the 17th of June. And so if you go type in Gone Digital Media, you'll find the details of that conference. And why not pop in and see how you find it? And it could be some real value to you. So as always, there's archived versions of the Leadership Show by going to Premier.plus, the app and the website, or going to your podcast provider and typing in the Leadership Show or its formal name, the Leadership File. This is Andy Peck, your host. Thanking you for your company. Looking forward very much to you joining us again. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.